Welcome in, everybody. It is Inside the Gamecocks, the show. Firing off here on a terrible Tuesday. We are live from the mountains to the sea in the great state of South Carolina, coast to coast, nationwide, and worldwide via the Chief Sports Network app. I am Phil Mad Dog Mullinax, cutting through the orange fog of the upstate of South Carolina. And as always, JC Sherbert, my co-host. Welcome in, JC.
What's up, man? I want to start today, something I noticed in the chat box, and you know, we were doing the happy thing. Bruin, this is interesting, Bruin, because I'd like for you to kind of explain it, because I don't know that this is a very factual statement. The parallel between Arkansas and South Carolina in football programs are very similar. Surrounded by better programs and richer programs and struggling to stay with them. I don't think it's even close to similar. If you look at what Arkansas has done, it's also not close to, if you're talking about recruiting, South Carolina has like twice the size of the in-state talent base. And what richer programs are surrounding South Carolina? They don't border Texas. Who's right here that's got all, you know, that's Daddy Warbucks. So I'd like to hear what you got to say, because I think Arkansas is, you know, how they used to do it was they won and they had a winning, and they were a lot like Oklahoma. They would come in and raid Texas and bring them across the border. And then that kind of dried up. They're almost one of those schools, kind of like Nebraska, where the SEC over time has become less of an advantage for them. You know, for South Carolina, it's tough. It's a brutal conference, but geographically, that's been the geographic excuse for this program is false. It's false. People talk about small state. It's a small state, no talent. Okay. Land wise, it's a small state. Population, which is what football talent's based on, it's the sixth largest state in the SEC footprint. You know, you look at the per capita numbers for NFL talent, it's way up there. Oh, and then by the way, there's all these three-star kids that, oh, just happen to end up being really, really good when you get them. So it's almost like being, having a state, whole state that's kind of like Virginia Beach. The geography of this program is a huge excuse people have used for years. And I'm not saying that's what you're saying. That's why I ask you, Bruin, because I was like, that's very surprising to hear that. I mean, I don't think it's even close. Arkansas's in Northwest Arkansas, which is a nice place to live up near the Ozarks. But there's probably eight or nine power four level guys in Arkansas every year. And then if you kind of want to break that off, and how many guys could play in the SEC every year? Maybe four or five. So the state of South Carolina has a lot more than that. Plus, you know, when South Carolina goes out of state to North Carolina, they don't have to deal with the SEC, an SEC school in that state. And then Georgia has a ton of talent. And you go right there, go down to Florida and go up and down the East Coast. So I don't know. I don't think it's even close. You know, Art and Harrison brings up a good point in the chat box, too. Look at how many players have leave Arkansas on an annual basis. Their AD said it too, Hunter Yurachek, about, well, we don't have the money to spend in football. You know, that's why I get why they fired Sam Pittman. At some point you have to make a move, but man, I don't know that I maybe wouldn't have written him a check to go get a great D coordinator like he had when he had Barry Odom. And say, fix it. Because you can score points. But, I mean, players love playing for him, and they were leaving just because of money. And they got poached. Carolina hadn't had that problem in a long time. But I thought it was interesting, Bruin. I did, because I was like, I was just surprised. I mean, maybe I'm missing something would be my question. Am I missing something, Phil?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, not everybody's got sugar daddies. And
I mean, and I don't even know, but you're saying it's paralleled. I mean, Arkansas used to be really good, like competing for conference and national titles good.
Right.
They were good under Houston Nutt, and then they ran him off, mistakenly enough. Hired Petrino, and they were they had it going under Petrino, and then that happened. And they hadn't really been the same since. Brett Bielema, I think, had a good formula for winning there, but once his guy that was recruiting that I don't remember his name, he ended up getting the Florida Atlantic job, I think, but he was on his staff and in Wisconsin, and he would go get like players out of South Florida. And that's how they got Alex Collins. And they were good when they had a back and a good offense. And he could go all over the place. Sam Pittman was his O-line coach, I think. They go all over the place and get offensive linemen. And then once he couldn't quite go get the backs and the talent, I mean, the Wisconsin plan wasn't going to work. So they hired Chad Morris. I don't think Carolina's ever had a coach that got blown out at home by both North Texas and Western Kentucky in a two-year career. By the way, that was Clayton White on defense as the D coordinator against Arkansas that year. It was the first Chad Morris Western Clayton White meeting. That will happen again this year in the Palmetto Bowl.
That's true. Yeah, we get to renew that. We can chat on that
relation. A few more better, some better players probably. But so you got that. I don't know. I mean, Arkansas, that's a tough situation. So Quantrell mentions Fayetteville also doesn't have an identity, wants to be Austin, Texas. Yeah, it's not Austin, Texas, but I've been there before, but I've been to kind of like Springdale also, and what is it, Bentonville out there? It's a whole like Tri-Cities area. It's a nice place to live. Northwest Arkansas is tremendous. But South Carolina does. I mean, and it's weird to say. I mean, Arkansas has had more success in football than South Carolina has historically and in the SEC. But toward the end of the Bielema era, outside of a couple of years where South Carolina's current offensive coordinator was their offensive coordinator. They've really, really struggled. And you can trace it to money, and you can also trace it to the recruiting footprint. They don't get, South Carolina could just recruit the state, and get a lot of guys from the state, develop them, and probably be more competitive than Arkansas. Just because of the in-state talent base, they wouldn't win a whole lot, just to be honest. But then would they be more competitive? Probably. You're talking, it's a great year if they got to a bowl in that situation. But if they were in the same financial situation that Arkansas were in, they could probably do some damage based on their location. So I don't know. I don't know. And look, if you look at the borders, North Carolina is not over. None of the schools in North Carolina are outspending South Carolina. Georgia's certainly not. Clemson's certainly not. Although Clemson does do a little bit more high school talent wise sometimes than South Carolina. It's interesting because I've been saying that about Georgia for a while, and everybody, people don't tend to believe me. But if you go look at like I got something today from Dog Nation talking about how kind of the recruiting plan at UGA has changed a little bit. They've got some good players coming in, but they've also filled it up with some guys they've gone and evaluated. And that's different. And Dog fans are a little worried that they're getting outspent or whatever, but Kirby Smart knows how to put together a roster. And I knew that was coming.
Yeah.
People associate winning and brand. This is why I always say when people are like, teams are just going to buy teams and the teams, it'll be like Major League Baseball. The team with the most money wins. And the team with the most money can put together a heck of a roster. Don't get me wrong. but it doesn't always equal winning.
No, I mean, football. There's still an evaluation and development side to this
that cannot
be denied. Right. I mean, I don't know why so many people turn their backs on that as if it doesn't exist at all. I mean, it is what it is. You can't just buy a national championship trophy. You have to have other pieces in place on staff, on the roster, you know, period. It just is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, and then that's just how it goes. I mean, you know, you just don't. It's a lot of worry about nothing. Now, look, I'm going to say this: do you need enough? Like, do you not need to be like Arkansas? Yeah,
sure, yeah. Sure. I
mean, there's a point where you can't compete, and it's not even so much like who you're getting. It's who you're losing every year. Mm-hmm. Because you talk about the development part of it. Well, how are you supposed to develop when guys are leaving? I mean, left and right. So, I you know, that's just one of those things that's interesting. Quantrell asked, "If what great interstate is Arkansas near?" Ooh, they don't really. So, to get to Fayetteville, you go – shoot, I think you go west on 40. Do you go all the way to Fort Smith? I think you do. And then you turn north up what's called Interstate 540. And it just takes you straight up. So in other words, it'd be like going down I-20 and you get to like Aiken or where Kreger lives, North Augusta, maybe in between Aiken and North Augusta. And then you get on a highway called like 820 and it takes you north to Clemson and Greenville, Spartanburg, that kind of thing. Arkansas is not quite shaped like a diamond like South Carolina is. So Cam said there is data driven chart that shows a direct correlation between those who are at the top of the recruiting rankings every year, which teams have had the most success in college football. That chart also shows South Carolina as an outlier, essentially doing more with less. I wonder, so I would guess Indiana is an outlier. I think you have to call them that now.
Mm-hmm.
But Ole Miss with the recruiting rankings, you know, their portal classes were always up there. Well, they were a semifinalist. And then, you know, Oregon obviously is up in the top 10. I think what you have to do is if people Cam was the one that had the data driven chart. I think what you have to do is get your share and you have to get enough. And then it comes down to coaching development, what happens on game day, all that good stuff. I think that the problem and the reason why people go gaga over it is they don't understand stars and they don't understand the star ratings, probably because we didn't do a good enough job explaining it. When you rank, when the industry ranks players, number one, it only hits at about a 60% clip. Number two, 5 stars aren't necessarily guys that are going to play in year 2. Some of their long-term projections to the NFL that terminate with the NFL draft. So people don't understand that. You know, they're like, oh, well, this guy's not playing by his second year or not playing as a freshman. He's a bust. And some of them are indeed busts. So, you know, the state of South Carolina is underrated, you know, when you look at the data. But you have to have enough. What's happened nowadays is on signing day, when you go back and you look at the rankings, yes, you're looking at who they signed on signing day. No, if you look at like the talent, what is it? 24/7 had the talent composite or whatever, which was never something that was intended, or at least I hope it wasn't intended to say this roster is as talented as this one. In the transfer portal era, because it's all based on potential and what you did in high school. And so 4 years later, that's not going to mean a hill of beans. Right. But what that can tell you is, you know, if you're just looking at the players on the roster, which I hope that's what they were, what it is, then that means that you know, that you're retaining those guys. Some of the schools like Georgia and Alabama that, you know, up until a few years ago were, you know, raking them in on signing day and finishing with top one or two classes, a third of those classes leave. You know, sometimes in the case of Georgia, they leave because of playing time. Carolina's got a couple of those on their roster right now. Sometimes, and what happens more often, is they can't cut it because they were over-recruited and they don't want to be de-recruited, and Kirby Smart's not going to play that. You know, same thing with Alabama, same thing with Ohio State. You know, you just, not every star, highly starly rated guy is going to work out. But how that hurts the Blue Bloods is depth. And then the chance, like when those guys are in their third year, if they get with the program, you know, let's say they couldn't transfer and maybe their first couple of years, and there's been players here that are like that, that have been like that. You have no confidence they're going to make it. Well, then the light comes on. They get into their third year, they decide to pick it up, do something, start to, you know, overly commit. And so then you get a player that's older and better for 2 years, and you don't have to rely on a freshman or a transfer. And that's the advantages. Why do you think Tommy Tuberville, why do you think he was all wanting to go back the old way? Because that's how they were successful at Auburn. You know, they'd fight tooth and nail at the end for some guy that wasn't going to play for him for 3 years to keep him from going to a place like Carolina at the time, where he probably would have played by year two at the least. Why? Because, well, number one, he doesn't get to go. He can't hurt you because he's not going to an opponent. Number two, you know, he's we'll get him right in 3 years. And it's just that way is kind of lost in college football, which is good for South Carolina. Good for South Carolina. TD Null says, speaking of transfers, Desmond Umezulu has turned heads in Tuscaloosa this spring. Not sure why he left other than money. Playing time, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that. I mean, I know Alabama made him a pretty decent offer.
So, pretty strong offer, eh?
but it wasn't that much more. But yeah, I mean, you know, he's been a career backup here. I also heard he was third team, so Alabama. So I don't know. I have to go look at that and see what the deal is there. They play their defensive linemen a little different too. So there's that. Cam said, did he leave right after Herring committed to us? Maybe. Was it Herring? Or was it? Oh, it was before that. So anyway, Cockweed asked, did I go past the stadium during the weekend? Yeah, we drove past there. Looked like construction's coming along. Looks a lot different. Sat at a pool near the stadium for a while. Got sunburned. Put on sunscreen, too. Still got sunburned.
So. Still got, yeah, it happens.
Yeah, that was one of those things. But it's looking good. Blake said, football is unique. The most important person on the field is the coach. You can mask coaching deficiencies in basketball with players. You cannot in football. Look at the national title winning coaches. Yeah, and I think you have to have – the head coach in some cases is overrated because the guy calling plays is very, very important.
Yeah.
Offensively and defensively. So the coordinators, how many times you see a head coach? I mean, we just talked about Arkansas and Sam Pittman. You know, Kendall Briles last year there was 22, and they ended up taking some unfortunate losses. They overscheduled that team, taking some unfortunate losses and had some injuries to KJ Jefferson and kind of changed everything around. And then so he goes and Kendall goes on to TCU. And a lot of Arkansas people are like, yeah, I'm glad he's gone. Then they hired Dan Enos, and he lasted 8 games. You know, and then they hired Petrino, and all of a sudden, oh, we're good again on offense. So it matters. That's why North Carolina may not be as terrible as I thought.
Right.
Petrino's there now. So Krager said he and Clint were high on Desmond. Yeah, Desmond, I was very high on Desmond as well. Mm-hmm. I always knew he would take some time because didn't get a lot of coaching in high school, was playing inside, tall, skinny guys inside. Yeah, you got to move outside. But I thought if he could end up playing his best ball at the end, and unfortunately Alabama may get the benefit of this, he really had a shot. So, yeah, we'll see. You know, we'll see if he's really third team or not. So, I think it's going to be interesting to follow certainly this year. I mean, there's a couple. I think Brian Rowe is probably going to be really good at UCLA. Some guys that transferred out. There'll be some players that left that end up doing good. I mean, Omega Blake, speaking of Arkansas, went there and caught a lot of balls for them last year.
He did well.
So it should be pretty interesting to see what happens with those guys. All right. I guess it's time for a break, Phil.
Yeah, let's
take I guess Bruin's not going to get into the conversation here.
Maybe he had to step away.
Maybe he did. We love Bruin. I was just curious to see like what he was thinking about there. I wasn't trying to blow him up. I just want to know what he was thinking. Mm-hmm. Like what led to that.
Right.
Because I may be missing something. You know. T.D. Null said Desmond Umezulla is going to have a career game. I mean, I was thinking about the Ole Miss game. What was that? I was talking about it on Coffee today. Ole Miss 2024 when Juice Wells came to town. And I remember at the end, like Juice caught that pass over the middle. Todd goes, oh, no, it's Juice Wells.
Oh, no.
And he's heading to the end zone, right? DQ Smith ran him down and forced the fumble, though. So that was
– yep.
But I think after what happened to the basketball team with Jermaine Cousinard a couple of years ago in the tournament.
Yeah, that
I mean, we all knew Cousinard, though, like at times had that potential. Some nights he had it, some nights he didn't. He definitely had it. Harrison disagreed. He said Dez U is going to be the next victim of the Lenore Sellers 16 signature shoulder shake and big game. We will see what happens there. All right. D's Wings Taco Tuesday tonight. Head on out. Get you some. Also, don't forget, coming up, Nike is coming to Gamecock Traditions, our partner over there, Gamecock Traditions. GamecockTraditions.com. All over the world, the Ultraverse. Get your Gamecock gear for Gamecock Tradition from the Gamecock Traditions, proud sponsor of ITG. Don't forget, we're on hiatus after Friday for summer vacation. But we will be website, YouTube, and all that good stuff during that short time that we are away. All right, we'll be back after this to wrap things up.
Welcome back, everybody, inside the Gamecocks, the show here on a terrible Tuesday. Going through some stuff going on in the chat box. Been interesting conversation kind of held over from the Happy Meter discussion in the morning show today. But head on back over there. You can rewind the tape, if you will, and listen to that and catch up on who's happy and who's not in the SEC. Mm-hmm. Some interesting, all the A schools, right? And then, I don't know. It's interesting because it's such a subjective thing. It's kind of like, you know, ranking teams in the offseason. Well, I think they're okay. They should be.
What are we talking about?
Happy meters. It's interesting. Oh. The discussions there.
Well, I mean, there's a difference too between like fans and reality.
Yeah, right.
You know, and the reason I said Florida was a four is that, you know, certainly there are some fans that are like, oh, I don't know about this hire. But they get all fired up, you know, whenever they get a new coach, because that seems to be what they want. And they're very passionate. Now, once that coach loses, they go back to one.
Yeah, right.
Pretty quick. They're not a stick to it. Mm-hmm. So that type of thing. JDS says, I read JC's article on the offense. Yeah, I had an article on thebigspur.com today, kind of about the differences. You know, we keep talking about, oh, it's easier to learn this offense. Well, I kind of dug into why. And when you have these big, long play calls like they do in the NFL, the Gruden thing, it's and here's how I compare it, Phil. You know, when you get a prescription at the pharmacist, there's the brand name, right? That's and then right. There's the Latin name for it.
Yeah, the chemical name or chemical whatever. Name. Yeah.
Okay. There you go. You know, it's a long, you know, I mean, your mind is, I mean, and so I think I read where doing research, I didn't put this in an article, but you have to be in the first year of pharmacy school before they really get into that and teach you. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if you do pre-pharm, you take Latin like as your language, right. Which I wish I would have done because that would have been great. You know, and he said that Patton Garcia asked Sellers for one of Shula's play calls. Sellers said a crazy long play, and Pat and Garcia looked mortified. Yeah, here's the thing, and I went through this too. So, like when Skip Holtz was here, and I wrote this in the article. All right, so basically their run plays were all like Major League Baseball mascots. So like, and a number. So like Brewers 11 would have been a run play. Brewers 15, or, you know, Braves 96, mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing. And then, like, so that would be run plays. Pass plays would be like NBA. So Hornets 69 or Heat 1 or something like that. I look back to Spurrier had steamers and wheelies, and he had all these his own names, Corkers. And then, so in his system, you'd have, they had some numbering, like you had semi, like looking at the playbook, they had seven semi, five semi, nine semi, and then nine outhouse. And outhouse was interesting because I looked at it, and it looked like two long nine routes straight down the field and then an out pattern, outhouse. So, and then he had formations like bandit left, tiger list, you know, something like that. I did read one time where like his running backs coach, I think Lawson Holland was his name, was a Clemson graduate. And so it was a positioning of a running back and he called it tiger. I don't know if he used that at South Carolina or not, mm-hmm. But, you know, so those were two pretty famous and successful offensive coordinators at South Carolina, or people that are calling plays that didn't oversimplify it. And the two, you know, when you look at the three coordinators during the Beamer era, I mean, and I'll go back to Mike Bobo. I mean, he talked about his plays and what they were called. And he's like, we call this Demon. And that's not hard to remember.
No. Yeah, you're okay.
A college kid. I mean, I used to, you know, Bill's wife's a social studies, majored in education social studies. And I remember being over at the crib and she was studying and me and some other friends were helping her do it with flashcards.
Yeah.
I mean,
big on flashcards.
But it was like words like pagoda, because I remember how she said it. It's like pagoda. I remember like pagoda. And then we'd all take a shot. But, I think she did quite well in those classes, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you're in college and you're learning all this stuff, I mean, it's a lot different than in the NFL. And I started thinking, I was like, I would be curious to know, because it's hard to find out, because some of the stuff's like secretive. How many successful college offenses have long worded play calls?
Yeah, right.
Because you will have people that argue with you that watch film. Okay. And bless them, they're good at watching film. They're better than me at watching film and looking at it going, oh, well, that's just inside zone, or that's just duo, or that's just this pass play, or that's this pass play. That's this concept or that concept. And that's true. And Kendall Briles and his offense has concepts like that. Hmm. Some of the same plays. And whenever you hear a coach say, well, it's the same plays we were running. Yes. But what do you call them?
Yeah, but how'd you get there?
How do you get there? And it is. And so I think that's part of the reason people look at it. And, you know, they know some football and they look at it and they blame the players. They're like, well, this is an easy, simple base run. And why is the left guard pulling out and
acting like, yeah,
chances are the call, somebody forgot, you know. And you remember when tempo offenses were really going, people would put like emojis and pictures of like famous celebrities and stuff on poster board, you know, on the sidelines. And yes, that's how they got the call. I've just never seen complex in that way, you know, be successful. Maybe there is. Maybe Bobby Petrino's playbook is like that. I don't know. But he sure knows how to teach it well and execute it. So Jadez says, I've seen Spurrier's playbook and a player show me Roper's playbook. I could understand everything at Spurrier's, but Roper had probably 800 plays and read like Latin. Even the players said it was crazy. So, yeah. You know, one of the things that happened with Roper, too, because it was explained to me like when Muschamp hired him back. And look, maybe David Cutcliffe had a pretty complex offense because that's where he learned it from.
Right.
But so we got to, you know, first year when Jake took over, I thought Roper called really good plays. The games they lost had nothing to do with play calling. It was because the other team had after Jake Bentley took over, the other team had a massive advantage against South Carolina's offensive line and Carolina had a bunch of freshmen playing. But it was told to me when they hired Roper as the OC that, yeah, he's got some brand new RPO stuff he's brought back from the Cleveland Browns.
Uh-oh.
And, I mean, in 2017, boy, that was something. I think some of these guys with these long play calls, too, they love to go slow and substitute and all that.
Yeah.
The guy before Dowell Loggins was that way. And now Dowell, from what it was told to me, was kind of a one word and number guy. Like one of the players told me before Dowell's first year that his offense was really had a lot of concepts in it, like a lot of concepts, like more concepts than they had, but it was so much easier to learn, which to me says yes. Satterfield's playbook, I heard similar things about Roper's. You know, just way too long. So I guess some of these guys that spend 1 year in the NFL, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought surely Shula would not, and Shula to his credit, dude. I mean, it's like you do something for 18 years and then, yeah, kind of football's football, right? And you're calling plays, and that's not necessarily always been your strength. You know, his strength, Mike Shula, has been quarterback development, not play call. And so you have to be comfortable calling it. So ergo, it makes sense that you're just going to teach it how you know to teach it so you can call it like you know to call it. Because in your mind as a play caller, you're like, all those words mean something. Like they mean where's the tight end lining up? What's the protection? What's this? What's that? And so it's hard for you to kind of shift gears. So I get it. I don't even know that it was a Mike Shula issue. I think Beamer maybe should have thought about that. But I mean, you know, maybe Lenore should have thought about it a little. I don't know. But it did seem last year. You look at all the problems they had on the offensive line. You got Lenore Sellers trying to, in those systems, the quarterback, it's all in the quarterback. You got to change the protection. You got to do this. It went slower than molasses. I mean, and then what the article was about was Bryles doesn't do any of that. So, so it'll be a good day. So Dexter says, Bob had a baby and it's a boy.
Yeah. Bob had a baby. It's a boy. Yeah.
So, yeah. So I don't know, but I just, yeah, these complicated playbooks and everything. I'm just like, not, I just don't know. I'd be curious to see where they've worked in college. Maybe, I mean, you know, Charlie Weiss, that was his problem down at Florida too. When he got to Florida, they couldn't run what, you know, Notre Dame, when he had Brady Quinn, and then when he had Jimmy Clausen, it was fine. But I
wonder if there is some sort of relation to, I mean, a correlation rather, between the ability to run a more complex offense and the day and time where we live, where everybody can just leave every school every time, right? Like, you were able to put in a more wordy or lengthy one because you'd have some continuity between a quarterback staying, you know, 2 or 3 years in the same system under the same coordinator for 2 or 3 years. These O linemen have come up, and now it's like you have to keep it, like, maybe the best way is to keep it simple in these times, because, you know, 25% to 30% of your team was on a different team last year.
That's hard, and that's why they changed up the practice schedule. But yeah, I just don't, you know, I don't know. And then I don't know. I'm sure that there's some kind of long wordy playbook out there that works in college. I'm pretty sure of it. I just don't know what. I haven't seen one at South Carolina.
Well, there's also the whole side of what new are we installing this week? Like, does your coordinator feel compelled to install, you know, X number of plays every week? I think that was one of the things that, you know, was one of the issues before Loggins got here was, man, we're putting in all these new plays every single week. And
that was atrocious.
Yeah.
And then it's like, and then in the games, but hey, once the play sheet that they brought into the games was, you could put it on a postcard, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. Once it was pared down.
As far as Marcus Satterfield's ability to call the plays fast, I mean, he's actually not bad.
No, oh, yeah, it just, I mean, overthinking it on the front end.
Overthought it like crazy. Just real, needed to relax a little bit, Spurrier had probably, if you counted it up, like in his basic stuff, head ball coach probably had 18 to 20 passing play concepts.
Yeah.
Like, depending on if, and I'm not smart enough to know this, it's different. They have different routes drawn on the diagram, depending on if, you know, semi seven is, I guess it's the semi family, but what's the difference? I mean, you know, that's not a whole lot, man. That you can fit that in a folder.
Yeah.
You know, and right. His run plays before Sean Elliott, and Eric Wolford, and then Elliott got there, they started running the zone read. His run plays were very simple. Like, very, very simple. Like, very base draw.
Right, yeah.
Toss, sweep. And they were good, too.
Yeah. It was effective.
So, T.D. Nell says, when are you going to give your season predictions for the season after media days? I don't give record predictions.
I don't know about record. Yeah, I could.
Bryce says,
scenarios.
Bryce says, if we don't win, let's get at least 8 this year with a win against that team in the upstate. It's a bad year. We'll see. I mean, a lot depends on how everybody else is. Like, we've been talking about Florida. Florida does have a lot of good players. Florida, people are going to talk about the quarterback situation. Philo obviously has the experience with Buster Faulkner. I did see Krager point out that Philo broke Trevor Lawrence's record in Georgia. He did, but the comp, I think he's from like one of those small schools near Athens that I think Colton Gauthier threw for, what, 10,000 yards there too?
Oh.
I like him. He's a good player. Every time he got in the game at Georgia Tech. You know, my question about Faulkner, though, in that offense is, you know, and probably what they're going to try to do, Phil, is if their offensive line is good, because Florida could end up being a real swing game for the Gamecocks. It stinks Carolina's got to go down there
right,
and play because they don't, you know, they've only won twice at the Swamp of all time. Gamecock 346 is good day, guys. Got to go to work. All right, my man, Steve.
Yeah, see you care. Later.
They got to go down there, but I think Florida is how good's the offensive line going to be? And if they are, they're going to try to get the ball, pound the rock with Jaden Ball and another back. And then they have some really electric receivers. So what they're probably, I think they're going to try to get you to creep up, stop their run, and then hit you over the top. I don't know. They're going to be any kind of fast. You know, at Georgia Tech, Buster Faulkner used a lot of formations and substitutions and things like that, which, you know, when people are talking about Carolina should hire Buster Faulkner, I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know if we want to see a bunch of substitutions, all that. But
I'm seeing all these people running on and off the field already.
Yeah, TD points out he doesn't have a Haynes King back there. Dude, I thought Haynes King's leg was going to fall off at one point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, there's.
I don't know, but we'll see. We'll see who starts down there. But I think that's what Florida's going to do this year. You know, we'll see how good they are. I don't, yeah, the rest of the SEC. But, yeah, as far as season predictions go, I hate record predictions.
Yeah.
I think the last one I gave was in 18. I sincerely thought Carolina would go 11-2. I did not count on the defense having a bunch of injuries. I did think the offense was going to be quite good. Didn't count on games like Kentucky where, you know, the quarterback was off a little bit or a lot. And I didn't count on the receivers, three of the best to play in the last 20 years at Carolina, having a case of the drops.
Yeah.
And even if you like, the thing about 2018 was that Kentucky game, guys were running wide open down the field. I mean, Carolina could have torched them. Like you remember what they did against Clemson that year later on? They lost.
28, but, yeah, right. Yeah.
If the passing game would have been firing, they could have won that one. The A&M game, they got behind and then lost, losing by 10 after tying it. Could have won that one. So if they'd have won, you know, they finished, what, 7-5. 11-2. So, yeah, they won three more games. I think, was there another close one they lost? Oh, Florida. At Florida, speaking of the Gators. When they were up by 17. Oh, and just blew it at the Swamp. So, I wasn't too far off.
No.
That's kind of, you know, so. But that's the last time I did that, and it wasn't because I caught heat. It was just because I learned that after thinking about it, the most football games, the results of those games are based on scenarios, kind of what's going on at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I usually give score predictions and stuff, but just as far as that goes. Now, this team Carolina's got, what's their ceiling? Like if everything goes well and everybody plays their ability, they have a good year coaching and all that, and other teams maybe cut them a break, it's higher than 8 wins.
Yeah.
Absolutely higher than 8 wins. So,
yeah, I mean, there's, well within the range of outcomes.
Yeah. But yeah, like Phil pointed out, there's always a range of outcomes. All right. I got a meeting coming up here right now that I've got to run.
Yeah, man.
I got to run the meeting now.
I got
to. TD Null says it's hard to give record predictions. Injuries can derail you. Yeah. And TD, I don't know what some of these other transfers, these other places have. I mean, we're living in a world where last year nobody could name two guys on Indiana's roster and they won it all. I still think a lot of people can't, you know.
No.
Like their backs, who are awesome. I can't name those. Fernando Mendoza, that's what I know. Signetti and Mendoza.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, Malachi Toney at Miami was an unremarkable addition to their recruiting class, right there from Broward County.
And now he's the most recognizable name on the
so
team.
We're just, it's in a crazy world, man. And so it's tough. But I'll leave that to everybody on Instagram because they love to make record predictions. And I'll just comment on theirs. How about that?
That's right.
But I'll just say this about this season. I think the ceiling's higher than 8 wins. The ceiling. You don't always get to your ceiling. Most teams do not. But that's the ceiling's higher than 8. This is not a roster that you look at and go, oh, they're, you know, if the ball bounces their way, they can go 8-4. Pons. Yeah, Krieger points out Pons. Is that the running back or the corner? Pons was corner. Anyway.
Oh, that's
corner.
Yeah.
Now, he was from South Florida as well.
That's so right.
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah, corners and receivers in South Florida. You can go find them if you want. Go down there and do it. So, anyway, for the Mad Dog Phil Mullinax, for Mike Morgan, for JB, for Preston Thorne, we thank you for tuning into ITG today. I'll be on 107.5 here after this meeting. So apparently my afternoons, but
you're fully booked. Up.
We will holler at you soon. Thanks for joining us.